All this week, we've been talking about privatization in America, in education, public space, the military. Today, we'll wrap up our series with a look at how private companies came to dominate the internet and how that influences our digital lives. Joining us now via Skype is Jaron Lanier, who's a computer scientist, composer, and technology writer. Welcome back to Here and Now.
Oh, thanks much. Great to be back.
So how did the internet evolve to its current state, which is for the most part dominated by a handful of very powerful corporations?
Well, you know, the internet was created, you know, with that intent. Now, not digital networking predated the internet. The internet was a political process of making all the different digital networks interoperable. And back then, and we're talking about the period of the late 80s into the early 90s, there was a feeling that this would be an incredible driver of new value for the United States. And so we should do everything to smooth the way for it. And so there was a very strong feeling that internet-based businesses should be less regulated, less taxed, should have less accountability, like just like give them a chance to see what they can build. And I don't think anybody imagined that process would result in the loss of diversity that we've experienced. The idea was that there'd be a million internet companies doing a million things, and that is true. But on the other hand, the degree of dominance of just a small number of them, I don't think was adequately foreseen by any of the people involved.
Well, did people foresee that the internet would become a utility in a way that, you know, our email is just so vital, or our Facebook, or the other things that we use, that they do feel just as important as electricity or your, you know, phone connection or your water?
Well, you know, at the time, I think there was a feeling that the basic conveyance of information of the internet might be like a utility, but it's a tricky thing. I mean, once you have a lot of personal history tied up in a particular social media account, it does become like a utility for you. You depend on it. It's hard to imagine living without it. And yet, the people who provide that don't act like utility. They just act like as if they were one of a million different competing internet companies, even though that's really not a completely fair representation of what's going on anymore.
Well, you as a consumer don't have the same kind of rights you would have if these were public entities.
Right. Well, I mean, there's always been a sort of a confusing spectrum of public to private when it comes to communication technologies. This is, in a sense, these are not entirely new problems. I think the confusion here is that we have overlaid multiple sensibilities. We think of some of the internet companies as if they're one of many in the way newspapers are, while as in fact they're one of few in the way that old-fashioned broadcasters were, if you look at just how things have sorted out. No one dictated from above that there would be pseudo-monopoly, if I can use that word, effects. But what happens is their network effects just take hold and create pseudo-monopolies. So you tend to get on the same social media that other people you know are on. And so these hubs tend to become very powerful and tend to exclude smaller ones.
Do you think that these corporations are operating in the public interest?
Oh, you know, that's a tricky question. I would say that on average, people working in the tech companies have good intentions and good sensibilities and want to do right by everybody and want the world to be better. But, you know, what they want and what seems like the right thing from their perspective might not be the same thing as what really works out as right for everybody else. And that's what makes this such a difficult problem. This is a process we have to go through of trying to reconcile the fact that, you know, tech people have tremendous power now and don't necessarily have omniscience, don't have the perspective of all the people who are affected by that power.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Jaron Lanier, a computer scientist and technology writer. And Jaron Lanier, you make the case in your book, Who Owns the Future, that Facebook should be compensating its users. Explain that idea for us.
Well, it's not just Facebook. I think it's a good general idea. So let's consider this problem that jobs might go away because of automation. So people who drive for a living might not have a job in a few years if automated vehicles really take off and that sort of thing. What we have to understand, though, is that these technologies that can automate what people do aren't self-reliant. They actually rely on gathering data from multitudes of people. My favorite example for explaining it is translation between languages. People who translate between languages like English and German for a living have seen their careers just destroyed because of automated language translation. And yet, in order to make automated language translation work, we have to gather real live translations for millions of people every single day because the language changes with world events and pop culture and many other things. So those people are still needed. They're not, you know, buggy whips. They're not obsolete. They're still needed. It's just that under the new scheme, we don't value what they bring to the table. And so all I've been proposing is that if there's some service of value online that depends on data from people, if we started to pay those people for the value that they're bringing, we might be able to create a new kind of stable economy, a new kind of sustainable society that would have dignity and honesty at its root. If instead we just keep on gathering data from people and we say, well, here's your free service, but in exchange for that, we get to manipulate you because we have all this data about you and we have an ability to see more about your life than you can see about your life, that becomes an undignified society. And I also think a society that's less wealthy because we're not even acknowledging the wealth we're creating on the books. We're just using it in these stealthy manipulation schemes. So I feel like in the long term, it might sound counterintuitive at first, but I think a company like Facebook and really all the tech companies would actually become more profitable, more sustainably profitable, as with the whole society, if we just acknowledge the value that people actually bring to networks and paid them for it.
But do you have any expectations that will actually happen?
Sure, I'm an optimist. I mean, there are only three alternatives I can see, speaking roughly. One is that we sort of just revolt against technology, which I think would be terrible because we need technology. I mean, just as one example, if we didn't have the internet connecting sensors all over the world, we wouldn't even be able to measure climate change. So it's a matter of survival for us. So then the other two options, if we're going to live with it, are either we move to some kind of general income for everybody, basic income. And I just feel that would be undignified. I feel that people would feel like they're being kept by the algorithms. And I think it would lead to a concentration of power for whoever runs the scheme. And it would be really a bad world. I know some people think it would be great. I just see every bit of evidence from history that it would be terrible. Or we find some way to have wealth in this new digital economy distributed and some way to give people dignity by just being honest about their contributions and also create motivations to contribute better instead of just this black box that nobody understands.
Do you think we're better off or worse off because the internet has developed in this private way that it has and not more as a public entity?
Well, that's a really hard question because there's no such thing as purely public or purely private. I do think that we probably went a little too far in opening up the internet for completely Wild West, you know, open season for monopolies to form. I don't think anybody anticipated how severe the effect would be. In retrospect, those of us involved probably should have considered at least some taxation, at least some accountability. I think we went too far in making it easy. But on the other hand, you know, the process is still unfolding, and hopefully we will learn lessons from what has worked and what hasn't worked.
Well, and we wouldn't have had probably anywhere near the innovation if the process of the internet becoming the internet had been controlled more by some authority.
I find this to be a bit of an imponderable question. I mean, on the one hand, now we have an internet that's approximately controlled by a handful, you know, I don't know, 5 or 7 top tech companies. Is that really less control than some government authority? These are not easy questions. And this cliche that government means less innovation, you know, it depends what you mean by government. It's all in the details. I mean, overall, look, it could have been a lot worse than it's been. I mean, I think we're not good enough, though. We need to really reconsider how this is working and make sure that we still have dignity and livelihoods in the future as the technology improves.
How do you think the issue of net neutrality fits into the privatization of our digital lives?
Well, net neutrality is a term my friend Tim Wu came up with to describe the problem that unfortunately, a very large number of people can only access the internet via a very small number or even only one choice. In my case, there's only one broadband provider I have. There's no other choice. And so that could potentially give that provider a chokehold on controlling everything. And so I would tend to agree that we should have some kind of restrictions on those situations where there's not adequate competitiveness and people can't get on except through some firm that then has total control over everything. That seems like a really stupid anti-market outcome. And yet somehow net neutrality is instead being purveyed by some people as this sort of pro-commercial freedom thing when it's exactly the opposite. It's more of a granting of a new monopoly to a different class of companies. I think you have to be pro-net neutrality if you want a functioning internet. I mean, it's sort of bizarre to me that this is even a question at this late date, but apparently it is.
That's Jaron Lanier, a computer scientist, composer, and technology writer. His books, You Are Not a Gadget and Who Owns the Future. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, sure. I'm happy to be on.